Well, welcome to this edition of the Roundtable Discussion with Knights Party, and I'm Thomas Robb.
And I'm Jason Robb.
Rachel Pendergraft.
So we're all here. We're all ready, raring to go.
Yep. Well, we are.
We're still celebrating.
We're still celebrating. This is the first Sunday after the victory of Donald Trump. Donald J. Trump, I should say. Donald J. Trump. And so, yeah, it's a very... I don't know. It's just kind of a rewarding week to me just to see not only that Trump won, but the way he won. I mean, it was a landslide victory.
Yeah.
It really was. And especially seeing the several states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, just to name a few, that the Democrats just knew they were going to have. And they flipped towards Trump.
I find irritating is everybody's talking and recognizing that it was a united white vote that brought him into election, but there's also the same people saying, but it has nothing to do with race.
Yeah.
You know, it has nothing to do with race. It's just the white people are feeling left out and overlooked and stuff like that.
You well, gotta have pity on them.
That is about race. Yeah. Like, exactly. There might be a few racists among them. Well, it's because, again, they're trying to conjure up this idea that there's people that hate black people, and then there's just white people that feel left out.
Yeah.
And the fact is, there might be a handful out there that feel like that, but most people, you don't have to hate black people to be proud of your race and to make it a racial issue.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's obviously going to be a few people, like you say, that are actually out and hate so-called minorities. But the vast number of people in America are just upset that the country is changing. And it's not changing because they voted it to be changed. It's being forced upon them. And those who are spokesmen and speak out about this change, then they're labeled as racist and imply that they are haters. And such as us or David Duke or many others, they imply these people are haters. And when really, really, we don't say anything different than the vast majority of Trump supporters say and what Trump himself has said over the past 18 months during his campaign. And because there's many issues that are of grave concern to people that don't appear to be racial in when you isolate them, like the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Right.
That does not appear to be racial, but ultimately at the foundation, it is racial.
Right.
Same with the open borders, it is racial. Same with loss of jobs, it is racial. All these things come back to the foundation of America's traditional principles. And it was a very unified nation built upon a common sense of race and family and heritage and faith and all those things being eroded today.
Well, I mean, like we always say, I mean, every issue out there goes back to race. You know, even the so-called Obamacare that's been making a lot of, you know, buzz the last couple of days. You know, that is based on race as well. Even though the Obamacare, like I was saying, that again is something that goes back to race because
they're giving it to a bunch of illegal aliens.
You have more people taking benefits of the insurance program than those that are signing up. The people that are signing up are, for the vast majority, are your white population.
Right.
They're not signing up now. And so you have basically half of the population that is not producing it.
You got all the illegal aliens, but all their border babies, all having to be nourished in a hospital, taken care of, then the normal percentage at least of those babies need extra care, the extra operations, extra medical, you know, procedures, then runs the bill up even higher. And all this is taxed to the American people, the voters, the taxpayers.
Well, right. And the thing is, you know, for the white working class out there that have benefited from, you know, some of the state, what they call, you know, private options and stuff through Obamacare and so forth, You know, we could take care of our own people if we didn't have to take care of everybody else. So we could still take care of the working class or those people that, you know, weren't, you know, able to pay a big premium or things like that, because there are working white people out there that have benefited from it. But the thing is we could all benefit if it wasn't for the fact that we were taking care of everybody else in the world.
Correct.
You know,
yeah.
And all the refugees that are coming over here. And then even though it's not directly tied to the Obamacare, the Social Security, I mean, why is some illegal Juan Valdez from Mexico, 70 years old, coming up here and getting Social Security?
Well, then, yeah, and then they talk about, well, we need all these immigrants to help pay for this ballooning Social Security payments going to the baby boomers. We need all, but the vast majority of those people are not paid into the system.
Right.
They're sucking for the system.
Exactly.
I don't want to use the word underprivileged, but I guess for lack of a better word right in my head right now, they're an underprivileged class of people that are sucking from the system, sucking welfare, public housing, food stamps, age of dependent children, medical care. They're all sucking from the system.
Minority,
they're not all here working.
Minority business loans.
Absolutely. They're not all here working and paying into the system. They're all sucking out of the system.
They in turn, especially like the small business owners and stuff that are non-white that come here as illegal immigrants, or they get their, you know, visas and work permits and stuff like that. They in turn, they end up, you know, just like the guy up there, I believe it's in Idaho or Oregon or somewhere, but with that big yogurt company.
Ben and Jerry?
No, that's up in Maine. Uh-huh. The yogurt company, I can't think of the name of it right now. But anyway, he's a Middle Eastern immigrant, came here, you know, 20 years ago, and now he's got the largest yogurt factory in the United States. And he almost exclusively hires non-whites from India or the Middle East or, you know, different places like that. And he's like, brings them in.
And well, you know, what they say is they...
I'll try to remember that. The name in a minute, because it's the yogurt we all eat. It's in every grocery store.
Yarmil or something?
No, okay.
Anyway, the thing is that they say these people getting jobs means that they're not dependent upon the system. You know, in other words, we don't give welfare, public housing, because now they all got jobs. You know,
well, they're taking other people's
jobs. Absolutely, they're taking other people's jobs.
Well, it's just common math. You bring one person from outside of the United States. That means they're taking a job from someone that's inside the United States. I
Absolutely.
Mean, it's simple math.
It's like the butterfly effect. It's like, well, okay, you know, or they talk about, you know, the baby boomers. Well, we need all these young immigrants to come in because we need them in nursing and home health care and this and that and so on and so forth. It's like, well, first off, we've got lots of young white people in this country that could do that job. Plus, the fact is, if you didn't have this huge welfare class and foreign aid and all this and stuff where we're like forking over all this money, then maybe a lot of people who are having to work to pay for home health care aides could actually stay home and take care of their own old people.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it always kind of irritates me when, and, you know, I'm not going to like condemn every person that, you know, uses different, you know, resources like this, but I mean, families should take care of each other. And when I see people going out and getting a job so that they can pay for someone else to come in to take care of their family members, you know, or for the babysitter or the daycare or the elder care or this or that, it's like, you know, why don't you, you know, take care of your own people? You don't have to. Like, it's like you're getting money to give to someone else instead of just staying home and just canceling that entire. It's like just a trade of money.
Right.
You know, you give me money, I'll give someone else money. I'll be away from the home all day long instead of being at home with my family.
Right.
And right now, I guess I'm primarily speaking to a lot of the women out there, you know. But, you know, it's kind of like a culture that people get sucked up into.
Right.
And sometimes it's like they talk about a cycle of abuse. It's a cycle that an economic cycle that people have been caught up in, and it's hard to just break it, you know.
Well, you know, if you look up until the mid-60s with the Immigration Act that was passed, that basically allowed vast majority of the non-whites coming in to the United States to become citizens. Before that, you know, you didn't have problems with, you know, the welfare system. You didn't have problems of people going to the hospital for needed, you know, care or checkup, because now if you go to the hospital, you're basically going to be bankrupt, you know. So there was not that financial burden. There was not the
right
security concerns. There was not the concerns about really anything until you had the vast majority of these non-whites coming in. That changes everything economically, your culture, the morals, everything. And now we're seeing the fruits of that.
And you know, the liberals will say, Jason, you just, the country is changing.
Yeah.
You just understand that.
Yeah. The face is more a little bit brown.
Yeah, you just need to understand that things don't always stay the same. Things do change, and it's part of progress. And it's hard for some people to adjust. But if you just learn to adjust and get into the program, you'll find that it's not that bad.
Yeah, well, learning to adjust to a driverless car and technology is a whole lot different than learning to adjust by trashing your culture.
That's the difference. In the past, we've had all kinds of changes, improvements in the scientific field, in inventions, all these, but none of them attacked our culture.
Exactly. Right?
And that's what's happened. Is we're not just having a change in society as we advance and become more knowledgeable in technology and all this stuff. But we really have, we're changing, and what angers people isn't the change of technology, the change of our culture. Our culture is under attack, and that is what angers people.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I think, we can see the why people are angry, because that's why we saw this massive turnout voting for Donald Trump. And on the election night, I had to watch NBC and MSNBC because of the fact that I don't get Fox News on my direct TV, so I get those two liberal stations. But it was really interesting to see them almost being speechless, because all these states were coming in, and at first they were going for Trump, and then all these other states that were saying, oh, well, it's going to go for Hillary. Mm-hmm. But then all of a sudden they said it's too close to count.
At the beginning, I'm watching Fox News, and you notice a sense of depression.
Right.
People just seem like, oh, it's not, not going our way, not like we had hoped it was going to be. I was feeling like, oh, my goodness. Because I inside, I knew Trump was going to win. I didn't know it, but I felt it. And yet, at the beginning, the signs were that it's going to go Hillary's way.
Well, and the thing is, when all these states, there was about eight of them that were just basically just said too close to call.
Right.
And then it was funny because Chuck Todd, who is such a liberal on NBC, he's the senior political analyst and all that. But no, he's getting there and he's just saying, this is really interesting. He said, we've been missing this for all this time. News stations, all that. He says, the rural vote. He said, the rural vote. He said, they're just coming out in massive droves.
Oh,
and
he said, nasty white people.
And he said, they're offsetting your urban areas. Just offsetting. He said, yeah. He said, talking about Florida, he said, yeah, Miami-Dade County. He said, they're going to go for Hillary. He said, and so, that's what we're all looking at is Miami-Dade County, because that's what's going to help carry Florida. He said, now, he said, we're seeing all these droves. And he talked about the panhandle. Yeah. He said, there's just this rural vote in the panhandle. And he said, and outside of Miami-Dade County, he said, there's all these rural votes. He said, they're breaking records. He said, they're coming in, they're offsetting it, you know? And he said, we didn't figure this. And he goes, of course, in the rural vote, that's where your majority of your white population is. He said, historically, they don't vote. And he said, now they're just coming out voting. And we're dumbfounded. We have not figured the rural vote, you know. He just kept on over and over the rural vote. And after Florida looked like it was going to go for Donald Trump, and you had Georgia and some of these
North
other
Carolina,
states, North Carolina was another one. He said, this is not really a fight of
I'm trying to remember what he said, but it was something he said.
Political ideology.
He said this is the rule vote. Yeah. He said they're coming out.
Yeah.
You know, and of course he acknowledged they were white folks.
Say it may have been him. He said this is a vote between rural America and America.
Yeah.
Urban America.
And that's a code word of why it's against non-whites.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah. You know, this is a race war, kind of race war, politics of war fought time of peace. So this was a race war fought on November 8th.
And what was interesting about this is Chuck Todd, he was talking about, he said, the last two elections, he said, when Obama won, he goes, you could see those two last elections, basically how the political parties no longer cared. He basically said it this way, no longer really cared about the white vote.
Yeah.
He said they were focusing on your black votes, your Mexican vote, your Jewish, Asian. He said they didn't really care about
that's
them.
That's what Romney was doing.
And he said the white vote came out.
Well,
and they came out in droves.
Ann Coulter had been saying that for years.
Exactly.
She'd
been saying for years. If a politician could come up and go after the white middle-class working vote, and I hate to say middle-class working because white people across the economic spectrum are feeling the same way. But if they come out the white vote, they'll win. They'll win on a landslide.
Right.
But they've all forgotten about the white vote because they're chasing after all these minorities.
Well, that's what Kelly O'Connell or whatever it is.
Kellyanne Conway.
And anyway, she was speaking on Fox that night, right toward the end, when it looked like he was, he was probably going to win. Some people had already called it, but they were, Fox was being a little more reserved and they wanted to make sure. But that's what she said. She said, that in her advice to Trump and the way that they, tailored their campaign and everything was that there's a vast, and she came right out and said white, there's a vast majority of the white vote in America that the establishment Republicans have ignored. All they've been doing is worrying about going after the Latino vote because they've seen the surge in population. And so they've totally given up and have basically bypassed the white vote. And that they understand and Trump understands that this is a wide swath of America that is not being represented in office.
Yeah.
And she said, very confident. She talked about her growing up and just how, her years experience growing up, that she's seen the politicians, more and more just totally ignore white people.
Yeah.
Because they just, you got to get the black vote. And then when the Republicans decided, well, we can't really get the black vote that much, well, let's go after the Latino vote.
Yeah.
And so that's what they've been after, is the Latino vote.
Right.
And she's like, they've just totally given up on the white people in America.
Yeah. One person said, one newscaster made a comment, this is the Republican Party is now the party of the white working class.
Yeah.
And, well, it will stay that way. I don't know. But.
Well, and and of course, the reason I keep on saying Chuck Todd, because that was a station.
He's your hero.
No, he was a station I had to watch. He was the greatest fan. He was a station I had to watch because I can't watch Fox News, so I had to watch MSNBC, extremely liberal, or a little bit less liberal, NBC, but they were still very liberal, anti-Trump and everything else, so I'll just have to keep on repeating Chuck Todd because of the fact that that's who I kept on watching.
Did you write to him and ask for his autograph or anything like that?
No, I didn't do that. Not yet, anyway. Eventually might do that, Chuck Todd. I'd get a picture of him, put him on my wall. That might be something. But yeah, Chuck Todd was talking about on election night, just about the rural vote, and he said that, like I've already said before, that the political parties really have abandoned the white vote, but he just was surprise about all the rural voters that were coming out in support of Trump, and basically saying that Trump supporters, which was a rural vote, when they talk about make America great again, they're in their mind talking about how it was in the 50s and 60s,
right,
everything before the 1965 Immigration Act was passed.
Right.
And the non-whites, they don't like the idea of Make America Great Again because it means they are not in control.
It means less white. It means less non-white.
Well, yes, less non-white. It means their cultures and their ideas and morals are not relevant or are considered taboo. Everything that white people think of the good years of America, 40s, 50s, and in the 60s, that's what people, when they say, talk about Make America Great Again, that's what white people think. Non-whites, they don't want that.
No, no. It's kind of like Rick Tyler there in Tennessee with the Make America White Again. That's, you know, that's basically what people are thinking about is, you know, they want that golden age back when they could go to town and conduct their affairs and they would mostly see white people and there wasn't this, you know, insurrection going on continually in this attempt. I mean, white people are sick of, you know, forcing this gender bender junk in the schools and all the, you know, the affirmative action stuff and the privilege walks and this on and on and on and on and on. It's just like it's ad nauseum. It's just over and over an attack upon the culture of white people and white people are just, you know, really getting sick of it. But one thing, I was watching Lou Dobbs last night, and I forget who he had, I forget the name of the guy that was on there, but he had written a book about the whole election process. He had been over there and helped Farage in the Brexit vote, and he was talking about how basically everyone had forgotten about the white vote of the high school graduates. And that kind of slightly irritated me because that's still kind of like what some of them are saying is this was like the working class, the non-college educated and so forth. And not that there's anything wrong with just having the high school diploma that used to be good enough to get a good job. But the fact is more college educated whites voted for Trump than for Hillary. So it wasn't just, you know, the white, you know, blue collar, it was white people across the board that voted for Trump. And, you know, I think that's an important thing to remember because, you know, in the Knights party and so forth, we've always talked about how, you know, we're not Republican and we're not Democrat. They were talking about this yesterday about how Donald Trump, somebody was actually, there's a guy that actually predicted that Donald Trump would win. I don't remember his name either. He's been interviewed numerous times over the past few days, but he's now predicting that Donald Trump will be impeached by a Republican Congress because they said he's all over the board. He's not strictly Republican. He's not strictly Democrat. He like kind of picks issues from both sides that he supports and that if he doesn't kowtow to the Republican establishment and the issues that they want, which a lot of that is nation building and pretty much interfering in foreign affairs and globalism, stuff like that, which has been a big reason that a lot of your Bernie Sanders supporters were for him and as opposed to Republicans because people were sick and tired of all the globalism and stuff, but that he was predicting that the Republicans will eventually impeach Trump because he's not going to go right along with what they want. And that is why I believe he did get elected is because just like I just mentioned, the Knights Party and so many white people out there, that's why he was able to galvanize white people from both sides, get so many independents and Democrats together is because we're not a total ticket type party or consensus. We're not for globalism and big business and you know
nation building
or national corporations. I mean big business. I mean everybody's got a right to build a big business. I don't think you have a right to build a corporation that just transcends national boundaries and then upsets the political bases of different countries and so forth. But you know Trump does have issues that white people on both sides of the aisle care about, and that's why they all came together to vote for him because he is like he's like a third party candidate even though he was on a you know main party ticket. He's like a third-party candidate.
Well, and that's what a lot of the panelists were talking about on election night. Chuck Todd, there was also...
You just really like him.
Yeah, I really like Chuck Todd. No, but there, Chuck Todd and...
Rachel Maddow, I think she was on there.
She was on MSNBC, okay. But Chuck Todd was on the NBC.
Okay.
There was also the former anchor of NBC.
Brian Williams.
Not Brian Williams, the one before that.
Peter Jennings?
No. Oh,
I can't even remember.
Yeah. Him. But anyway, he was the former anchor of NBC.
I think he was at Jennings at ABC.
Right. And so anyway, he was a former anchorman of NBC. There were several other panelists. But they were all talking about that as well, that Donald Trump, even though he's ran as a Republican, really he's not a Republican in the sense of the establishment.
Right.
And they were saying how when he ran for president, the only really the former president or candidate for president that actually that supported him was Bob Dole.
Uh-huh.
He said all the other Republican presidents, the Bushes, as well as John McCain, none of them supported Donald Trump. And he said even with all them coming out against Donald Trump and him still winning without the establishment blessings and vote, shows that the Republican Party is not going to be the Republican Party of the Bush and Reagan years.
Right.
Because he said you have so many of them that basically have... basically, the Republican Party has changed.
Right.
And kind of like what you said is Donald Trump really is an independent person in a Republican establishment.
Right.
But they were even acknowledging that the Republican Party is not going to be the same Republican Party because there are so many different issues now that transcends both political parties, the political aisles.
Right.
And so, yeah, everything from environmental issues to America First, the security, the border security and abortion, all that, all of those issues kind of goes both ways on the political spectrums.
Right.
And so you can't just say, okay, I'm a Republican, so I have to believe in these ideas and that's it.
Right.
I mean, you can be a person that believes in maybe some of the issues of the Democrats, and the Democrats can have some issues with the Republican. And that's why Donald Trump is so popular, because he wasn't a cookie cutter.
I think that, you know, his election is a good predictor of future politics in this country from the standpoint of the Knights Party, because, you know, the Knights Party, you know, were very conservative on social issues, but, you know, we also, you know, want the limited government, but we also have concerns for the environment. We're not in support of globalism, big business, nation building, basically interfering in international affairs, the Wall Street deal. I mean, there's just so many different issues that, you know, it's a shame that both, you know, like your old-time Southern Democrats, you know, a lot of these people are kind of like reminiscent of your old-time Southern Democrats. Yeah, they want, you know, they want care for the working class or maybe, you know, some of the working class that are in more dire straits. So it's not like they're totally across the board opposed to any social programs to help people, but they are opposed to it if it comes at the cost of draining society because they're allowing all the illegal immigration and refugees and stuff like that in. So, I mean, it's like you can't have social programs that benefit everyone. You've got to, you know, it's like if you're going to take care of your family, then you can have different programs to take care of your family. But if you're going to try to take care of everyone in the neighborhood, then it's not going to work.
Exactly.
And so, you know, that's why, even though a lot of people right now, they may say that, well, I didn't vote for Trump from a racial basis or this or that. The fact is, they're still in a state of denial. They're still trying to self-censor. They're still trying to rationalize their vote for Trump. They don't want to recognize it for what it is. But as the country continues to balkanize, as the non-whites and those liberal elitist whites continue to come together and, you know, refocus their energy on destroying, you know, the America of yesteryear and our values and you know, limited government and the small business owner and things like that. As that continues to happen and America continues to break up into regional fractions and so forth, I think we're going to see that people are going to come to terms at last. They're going to be forced by the situation to come to terms with the fact that, yes, this is a racial opinion that I have. And when you look at a political party with a historical American basis, such as the Klan, and you put that together with basically a campaign or ideology that kind of like what Trump is doing, I think that really shows a predictor for eventual success.
Well, the Nice Party, you know, for over 50 years,
right,
have been sounding the same things that Donald Trump has said. In fact, a lot of the things that you hear from the media, they're basically saying the Klan and the white resistance are supporting Trump because Trump basically is echoing the same things that the white race, the white resistance movement have been saying for over 50, 60 years.
Right, absolutely.
And that's why he's so popular because of that fact that he is saying the same thing that we've been saying for all this time. And more America gets in trouble, more non-whites comes in. Just because you think that Donald Trump won, all of a sudden non-whites are not going to continue coming in. They are going to continually coming in. America is going to continue to become a non-white country. And so we can't just relax. We have to make sure that this is an effort now to say, okay, we got four more years and we can continue to spread this message to our people. And the Nice Party is in a unique position to do that. And before Donald Trump was elected, the election, you know, the Knights have been getting a huge amount of publicity from the newspaper, the Crusader, talking about Donald Trump.
Reasons for the white support of him.
Exactly. And, you know, and you and, of course, Dad have been doing interviews with the Huffington Post, Washington Post, New York Times.
It's been international.
MSNBC. There just have been a huge amount. And they've been talking about the Crusader.
Right.
And this is why people, you know, that's listening, that are members of the Knights, really need to be proud of what's going on with their organization because the media is taking notice of the Knights Party. They recognize the Knights Party is a very professional organization, the white resistance movement. They are the premier white resistance movement. We have a professional newspaper, and recently they've been airing that live, live in their news reports of the Crusader, the internet websites, the shows, the political shows that we have on KKKradio.com. All this other stuff, they've been taking notice, and that's going to continue to increase.
Well, you know, especially with all the media work we do with our morning, you know, we were broadcasting video and news programs, current up-to-date programs in video on the internet a long time before a lot of organizations were even had a website. You know, we've been broadcasting live weekly and then daily for, you know, for over 18 years now. I like how Rachel Maddow was talking about when she was showcasing our newspaper Crusader, and she was talking about our White Pride TV and Alt-Right TV and the White Pride Radio and so forth. She was like, who knew they had a media empire?
You want me to play that? I actually got that up. And so this was on
the audio from that.
Yeah, this was on October 31st edition of MSNBC's The Rachel Maddow Show. And we're going to pull this up. Hopefully it will play that we can hear it.
Election is getting in these closing days. I tonight can prove to you that something called the Klan Act is not just vestigial. It's not just about ancient history. Because tonight, we just got a hold of this disgusting development. This is the newspaper of the Ku Klux Klan today. The Crusader, the political voice of white Christian America, the premier voice of white resistance. They've got you see the white power symbol there in the upper right-hand corner? They've got a whole media operation going on, apparently. Watch White Pride TV. Listen to KKK Radio 24 hours a day. This newsletter is about 12 pages long. Features articles on the threat of non-white immigration. We've got a very subtle feature on black people committing terrible crimes against white people. There's an article by the founder of the America First Party, which is all about the terrorist Jews. He brags in his byline that he's the man who David Duke credits for awakening him to the threat of Jewish supremacism. It's exactly what you'd think from the Ku Klux Klan newspaper, if you knew there was a Ku Klux Klan newspaper these days. But the front page, full page story is Make America Great Again, with a big featured center photo of Donald Trump. It's one of several articles in the paper about Trump, including this inset article about how Trump's candidacy is moving the dialogue forward. I should tell you, you can see this is a copy. We got a PDF scan of this. You see the picture there? That inset picture in that article is actually a still from a Saturday Night Live skit about seemingly normal Americans talking about how much they like Donald Trump, and then slowly they reveal themselves to be like, you know, ironing their sheets because they're Klan members. Well, that was a Saturday Night Live skit a couple of months ago. This is the Klan newspaper, and they're basically like, oh, yeah, well, yeah, that skit kind of nailed it. Look at the caption on that still from Saturday Night Live. Quote, Saturday Night Live produced a mock campaign ad, Voters for Trump, in which average Americans explain why they were Trump supporters. Then viewers learn that the supporters are affiliated with organizations such as the Ku Klux Klan. In truth, many do share the same concerns. The Klan is like, congratulations, Saturday Night Live. You nailed it. According to the Klan, you got us exactly right. Gosh. The Donald Trump endorsement version, edition of the Klan newspaper, this has been turning up on front lawns in the great state of Georgia. This one we just got a scan of. We obtained this tonight after it was picked up off a front lawn in Cartersville, Georgia, which is northwest of Atlanta. We think that we're actually going to get a physical copy of the Klan paper that's being distributed in Georgia over the next day or two. Right now, this is just a scan. I'll let you know when we get the original. If that's not a wild enough development in today's presidential politics, today is also the day that this guy came back.
The American National Super PAC makes this call to support Donald Trump. The white race is dying out in America and Europe because we are afraid to be called racist. Donald Trump is not afraid.
The white race is being replaced by other peoples in America and in all white countries. Donald Trump stands strong as a nationalist. The American National Super PAC makes this call in support of Donald Trump. My name is William Johnson. I am a farmer and a white nationalist.
Those are a couple of the many, many
Yeah, so, yeah, that's pretty good. And that was William Johnson, who oftentimes serves as counsel for the Knights Party and has spoken here numerous times. And so I think it is important that, well, first off, I want to mention that, you know, that shows a lot of people say distributing literature, newspapers and stuff isn't effective anymore, that everybody already knows what the issues are. They just need to get on board or get on the bandwagon. But, you know, that does show that newspaper distribution is still a very vital part of what members in the Knights can do.
And we had a huge literature distribution campaign right before the election.
Right, right. They members passed out in excess of about 50,000 newspapers nationwide. And this one that the Rachel Maddow Show got was from the Georgia area, but there wasn't any state that wasn't represented. And, you know, that's really important because even though we have, you know, in the white resistance, basically our own avenue to the people with our media and our websites and things like that, the fact is that the mainstream press, if you want to call it that, even the liberal press and so forth, highlighting the Knights Party, highlighting the issues that we espouse is still important because there are people out there still who need help in being directed towards the organization so that they can see that there is a sensible, common sense approach to the issues, and that, you know, once they get to our website, they're able to see, hey, these are average people. They've got common sense. They've got values and concerns that, you know, I share, and that the white, you know, resistance is not made up of a bunch of people shouting obscenities marching down the street somewhere.
No, they're families.
Yeah,
they're families.
This is a professional organization.
Absolutely, and that's why the Nice Party has really been set on the limelight, you know,
right,
with from the media, because they are recognizing,
right,
that this is a professional organization,
right,
and that is more scary to them,
right,
than some hoodlum out there just standing on the street corner saying,
right,
"Hey, white power," you know,
right,
or someone.
Well, we don't have to do any publicity type antics or act crazy or go marching down the streets or things like that. Stuff like that really repels white people. There was that not in relation to the U.S., but still generally, I think, applicable to the U.S., was that article in the Child and Family magazine in Germany here about 6-7 weeks ago, in which they talked about what they had the most fear of was racially conscious white Christian families, well constructed, organized, happy,
disciplined children,
normal, right, and that the establishment had more to fear from them than some skinheads or neo-Nazis or just what the general media wants to imply are racist people, that basically that are doing crazy antics to get, you know, a momentary spot in the sun, a little publicity stunts and so forth. And why, you know, that's important, what the Knights has always really impressed upon people is the fact that it's the white family and that it has to have a Christian foundation, which really separates us from some of the other groups out there, some that, you know, talk about, you know, white people and their culture, but they don't have the foundation of Christianity and so forth, because Christianity is a part of white culture. It is a historical part of our people. It was part of the foundation of this country. And aside from that, you know, I think as a Christian, it's important that we understand that, you know, there is power that comes through Jesus Christ. And you put all these things together, the focus on the family that the Knights Party has, not just in focusing on the family, but in utilizing the family as, you know, some, you know, we always talk about how people want to save the white family. Well, we say great, but the white family as a whole working towards their interest is really what the winning ticket is. It takes a general consensus of the mom and dad, the kids and everybody working together as a unit towards their future. And, you know, that and the Christian Foundation and our emphasis on the Constitution in America and just the traditional values that white people in this country have had, those are things that really resonate with white people in this country. And we know it resonates with them because they voted for Donald Trump. And
yeah,
even though Donald Trump has, there's the issues with, you know, the LGBT stuff and so forth, those are things that white people as a whole, I don't think they really recognize that aspect of his issue. So that wasn't like, oh, well, I like Donald Trump and I do like the fact that he has some support, you know, from the LGBT people. I don't think most white people really even recognize that aspect. They're looking at it all from the standpoint of middle class America, family values, traditions, and so forth. And so just on with that tone, again, that furthers, I think, the future prediction that, you know, the Knights Party really has a well-rounded program for galvanizing our people. And, you know, like you were saying earlier, Jason, while people self-censor themselves right now, and they're still afraid to recognize the racial basis for their beliefs and their votes and so forth. You know, when it, a lot of times these people, white people that are in rural America and suburbia, they really aren't face to face with the problems.
No, no, they really aren't. And that, of course, that's a good thing, you know. But, you know, people, and people they're listening to this, or even socialists that are listening to this, you know, they can go to KKK.com and they can read the platforms of the Knights Party. They can see what the Knights Party stands for, and they can see the issues that we are dealing with and we're in support of or in opposition with. So we have a platform, a well-thought-out platform that has been set out in stone for decades.
Right.
It has never changed. And so there are, you know, that is, again, what sets the Knights apart, is because we do have a platform. We have thought this out for decades, and we know that this is resonating with the American people, because vast majority of that platform is what Donald Trump is talking about.
Right.
And when you have Donald Trump surrounding himself with people that are somewhat like-minded, with Breitbart, the website that is extremely conservative, has a lot of racial issues, and you're surrounding yourself, when he's surrounding himself with those type of people that we know, in fact, have, I don't know about physical contact, that, but they've been in contact with the internet, with our organization and others, then we know that what we are talking about is actually making headways.
Right, absolutely. Well, and, you know, also, again, I think the message resonates with white people. The name Ku Klux Klan may not at this time quite yet resonate with white people, although our traffic continues to go through the roof, our website traffic, I would venture, and I think I'm accurate to say, that we're the most attacked white resistance website in the world. Just yesterday, we were receiving attacks by the World Bank. People are very concerned about the Knights Party because they recognize that our platform does resonate with white people. And as the balkanization continues, and these rural people in suburbia, if they continue to the escalation of what they're having to face, I mean, the urban people aren't just going to stay in their urban areas forever. They continue to kind of leech out, and the attacks upon white people are going to escalate over time. And that Ku Klux Klan name, which we, you know, some people kind of poo-poo upon, the fact is it has a rich tradition in America, that it stands for white people, that it's Christian, and it's going to resonate.
It
absolutely is.
And that.
Yeah. Well,
did you tell them I was going?
No.
We knew you were out. Had to take care of some other business.
Well, we have some work being done at the center, and we had a backhoe guy come a little bit early, and so I had to go over there and kind of let them know what we need to be done. So that's why I've been silent. If I was been here, there would have been something for me to say, I'm sure.
But
I'm here now, and so in tune what you said there. Not only is it the most recognized, but it's the most known. The brand, everybody knows about the Ku Klux Klan.
Right.
And so it's, say, the most the greatest traffic site in the alt-right or white resistance movement, I think, goes by just a matter of fact knowing that the average person knows about KKK.
Right.
They don't need to be educated about it.
They know the Klan stands for white people.
Right.
Wants to restore America to its rightful heirs.
Make America great again.
Yeah. And that's... But, you know, I want to kind of get back, Rachel, you know, talking about, you know, we know the Klan has, you know, a negative image to the media.
Right.
But we also know that the Klan is very favorable to large portions of American society.
Right.
But what I want to kind of get to is with the symbolism of Donald Trump.
Right.
Is up until this election, we saw a lot of, obviously, massive support of Donald Trump. But the media, and they even recognized on election night, that there was a vast volume of of Trump supporters who were hesitant to say they were in favor of Trump.
Right.
They were very hesitant. They were shameful. And one of the commentators was even talking about that their mother was having a major surgery, you know, and they went to this major university hospital, and this surgeon privately was talking to her mother that he was voting for Trump,
mm-hmm.
and she was just astounded that this person,
an educated man,
was going to vote for Trump, but he was doing very secretly, and so they were saying they did not expect all these people voting for Trump because there's a large portion of people that were afraid to say anything about voting for Trump,
just like they'd be afraid to say they support.
Exactly, and that's the exact same thing. Is there is a large portion of people that are not going to say anything in favor of the Klan publicly, but privately they will.
What they were doing is, first off, they're ruling out all these people in the city. None of them are going to vote for Trump because there are a lot of white people in the city.
Right.
But they can say they're not going to vote for Trump. The only ones going to vote for Trump are the hicks in the country.
Yeah.
And then they look at the demographic. What percent of demographics are educated and have a high school diploma or less or college education?
Right.
And then all the people that are college educated, they rule them out. They're all going to vote for Hillary.
Yeah.
The only ones going to vote for Trump are the uneducated
bubbas
in the country.
Right.
And so they figure, it's no big deal. And then they find out, hey, the educated people did vote for Trump because they're educated.
Exactly.
Right.
They know what's going on.
Right.
And they don't want their country being stolen any more than the poor man wants it.
Well, I mean, you got white doctors, you got physicians, you got all these professional people. Their own industry is being attacked. Doctors, for example, they know that they're bringing all these non-white doctors coming in. These nurses know that they're bringing all these non-white nurses coming in. All these professional people know that their own industries, that their own fields of practice are being attacked aggressively by non-whites coming in. And so they know that something needs to stop this, you know, because they know that the current administration is not going to do that.
Since Obama got Obamacare passed. Almost 8 years ago, the medical industry had been under siege by nurses from the Philippines, doctors from India,
Pakistan,
and been under siege. I mean, you find even little small towns like ours, you get new the facilities. They got Philippine doctors and India doctors and so forth. And it's happened all across America, and it's been going on for the past 8 years. Same thing happened in England, where over half the medical doctors in England are not even English. They're from Saudi Arabia or the Philippines or India or something of that nature.
Right. Well, you know, that's why, you know, in the Knights Party, we've always said we are not working towards a mass membership because most people are self-censoring themselves. I mean, they couldn't even come out and admit that they were voting for Donald Trump. They're certainly not going to come out and admit that they support the Ku Klux Klan. So we're not after a mass membership. What we are after is the leadership and those men and women who will be in this white resistance and this organization in the long haul, knowing that we have a good platform, knowing we have a good program, forecasting the balkanization, knowing that states' rights is going to become a bigger issue, knowing that white people are becoming disenfranchised, knowing that they're going to be looking for an alternative. We saw that people want that alternative by their vote for Donald Trump. And then using a smart strategy, our traditional Klan name that resonates with people, and tailoring that all together into a smart strategic program that can lead white people. And people, you know, it's important that people don't get discouraged. It's also likewise important that people don't think that we just had a huge victory for the white race and all is well and good.
The battle's over.
Right.
Yeah, because, the battle just beginning.
Yeah, the battle is just beginning. This is just an opportunity to regroup a little bit, to give white people a little bit of hope, give white people an opportunity to move out of those urban areas, settle their families somewhere else, plan smarter for their future, and really dedicate themselves for what is going to be a very, very long, long battle.
Because the non-whites and those extremists, they are not going to backtrack.
No.
They're going to even get more aggressive. They're regrouping.
We see this. So
they're regrouping.
Protests, as they call them.
And they're regrouping. And they're just regrouping in order to attack again.
Right.
You know? And so we need to recognize that. We need to be doing the same thing, okay? Just because it's over, we need to be regrouping, and we need to try to keep pushing forward, you know?
Right.
These protests have been occurring all this season. I suspect they'll kind of slow down after a few days. And there won't be, but there will be clandestine violence against white people, against police officers. And then we're going to see a huge, even bigger than this. We thought this was huge across the country. Wait till the inauguration.
Right.
On inauguration day, when Trump is actually inaugurated, you're going to see huge violent protests in almost every major city in the country.
Right.
We had at this time, they're talking about, what, 7 or 8.
Right.
But there's been many more that they have not talked about. We know in Miami, there have been protests. Insurgency going on in Miami, in St. Louis, and in other areas. So on inauguration day, it's going to be huge across the country. Every major, I'm going to venture to say almost every major city in America is going to be under siege in this direction.
Because you have wealthy millionaires and billionaires like George Soros and others. They're your Jewish extremists.
They're tired of that.
They are funding the money.
Yeah.
And they're planning for the next couple months.
Right.
And they're strategizing to do this on election night. Or not election night, but inauguration.
Yeah.
I was like Lou Dobbs was saying last night, you don't have an impromptu protest with pre-printed screen-printed signs and banners and stuff like that. Just, just within the last couple of hours, we've had a massive amount of signs screen-printed and made and shipped here and everything. Yeah, all these stuff planned ahead and well orchestrated. And
you got your buses that they're bringing them in. It's not the average non-white
paid agitators that come in and agitate the local urbanites, you want to call them that, and with the fever pitch, raise them into an anarchist mentality.
Yeah, and I would give this advice too: is that when that inauguration comes, that people need, number one, shouldn't be traveling; they need to be at home. If you're planning vacation, planning a trip, don't do it over that day. You stay at home. Make sure your kids are home. Now, I don't want to be fear and paranoia, but we've seen an evidence of what happened over this election. I think it'd be wise and prudent to know that the same thing is going to happen on the night of the inauguration and several days after. So that is not the time to be traveling. If you plan a trip, don't do it that day. Don't be caught in the middle of the city.
Yeah, don't be like, well, I'm just going through Chicago on the way to grandma's house 100 miles on the other side. Your interstate goes through, and they're blocking interstates, and they're pulling white people out of vehicles.
Yeah, so don't plan any trips in those days. And
unless you're going through the rural areas.
Unless you're just
traveling. And be careful about the rural areas in the South, which are highly non-white.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you really got to be, people have to be extra careful and prudent on those days. Same with you, make sure your kids are at home and have them go to any of the, young people's vacation. And people just may be prepared. Maybe make sure you got extra rounds of ammo in your holster and be prepared for that, in case they invade your home. I don't see that necessarily happening in mass anyway on an inauguration
day. We already see now videos of these anarchists, the non-whites, that are just literally pulling white people out of vehicles and saying, you're a Trump supporter, even though they don't know. They're just saying they're a Trump supporter because they're white people, and they're just going off on it.
I want to caution, we can't always say non-white. There's a lot of stupid kids, college kids, who have been sucked into this I hate America paradigm. And they're out of the streets here protesting, screaming, hollering.
And then some non-white group of what they call youths. Then there might be some white guy out there that's along with them in the protest, and then they're like, oh wait, there's a white guy.
Yeah, let's go get him.
That has happened somewhere always in the past, where white protesters would actually be attacked by the black protesters because they were white.
Right.
And so, because this is a race war, this is a war against our people, and they're not going to care what your political ideology is. If you're white, you are, in their mind, have white privilege, and you are an enemy.
Right, and it's also a very dangerous time for law enforcement too, because they're, you know, David Clark was mentioning that last night. Even though he's a black guy, the anarchists out there and the majority of the non-white population believe that any black people that, you know, stand for a traditional America or kind of recognize the value in the white traditions and things like that are Uncle Toms, and so they're just seen as traitors. So, you know, white law enforcement across the board are in a very dangerous position from these anarchists and non-whites and so forth. So, but that drives them to our side, because we have a love for law and order and white people in general, and law and justice in order in right. general.
I think we're out of time.
We are
out of time.
That's great. That was great. And
share this broadcast.
Share this broadcast. Right. Yeah. Share it on Facebook, any other social media.
Yeah. And help us out. You know, we have the battle still being waged. We haven't won the war yet. We want to take this message to our white brothers and sisters. And so help us out any way you can. If you want to pass out some literature, get a hold of us, send a contribution, well, however you want to do that.
Contribution is always nice because that's what keeps everything going.
Yeah, I'll mention real quick that we're getting ready to do our next big nationwide newspaper distribution. So go back there to KKK.com, click on the store link, and then click on the literature link, and you'll see there that you can buy a bulk quantity of Crusader newspapers and get those ordered right away, as soon as possible within the next day or two, so we can get that count number to the printer and you can help get those papers out.
And then I would like to also, Rachel, I don't know if they can do this to the donate button or they have to write, but maybe you know. But we'd like to find out how you heard about this broadcast. Did you see our billboards on the highway? Did somebody, a friend, tell you about it? Were you just searching on your own and come across it? We would kind of like to know how you heard about us. We certainly would like to know that. So even if you don't send a contribution.
Yeah, just put it in the comment section.
Yeah, okay. Even if you don't send a contribution, just let us know how you heard about our website, about White Pride Radio and Alt-Right TV. So anyway, until next time, this is Thomas Robb.
Jason Robb.
Rachel Pendergraft.
And we are reminding you to love your God and love your